table.
Good morning, I'm Diane Perla Barnard.
Morning, Lucky Twana, member of the committee.
Morning, my name is Pindile Mola, a member of the Portfolio Group of Defense.
Morning, Leonard Ramasakana, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We'll ask the Acting Secretary to introduce the delegation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Renewal for you, Acting Secretary of Police. And then I must also indicate that we were in Russia last week to attend the launch of the BRICS Working Group and BRICS Working Group on Drugs, and also a global ministerial conference on drugs. And I think we picked up a bag while we were there. So Ms. Omar is absent today, but she's represented by her office, and he'll introduce himself. And then also Mr. Zimo is with Ministry in China, but he's got two representatives from his office. And Ms. Kirutiyad Design, she will be the provincial secretary in Gauteng. So Mr. Kumpu is acting in her place. I'll just allow them to introduce themselves.
Morning, honorable members. I am Wiki Zimashilini, Chief Director, Corporate Services and Acting CFO.
Morning, members. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm from the Policy and Research Unit.
Good morning, members. My name is Bais Masson, and I'm from the Civilian Secretary for Police.
No, I am Director for Strategic Management. Thank you.
Hendrik Robertson, Director of Finance.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Anishan Soman, Director of Legislation.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mantiva Talani. I'm with the Partnerships Unit.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Mishek Mukhatusi from the Partnerships Unit in the Governmental.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Leander Kompo. I'm the acting Chief Director, Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning, honorable Chair and members. My name is Alfred Mundau, Head of Internal Political Management.
Thank you very much. May we also indicate that the theme that we have chosen as a portfolio committee for this last 3 weeks is really the question of leadership in the relevant institutions, whether they're able to fulfill their role, especially in terms of oversight. So this morning, again, we will look at that, the ability of the civilian secretariat to do the relevant oversight in monitoring the South African Police Service. And also, we will also look at last year's recommendations, what is the progress, and also challenges that we can come up with proper recommendations for the budget report. So we are looking forward to the presentation. So we will start then with the budget presentation, the annual performance plan, over to the Acting Secretary.
Thank you, Chairperson. The year 2015-2016 is an exciting one for us. At an institutional level, with regards to just having the institutional capacity to fulfill our mandate, there's been significant progress, which we haven't captured in the APT presentation, because a lot of it only happened now within the past 3 weeks. Most significant in that regard is that we are now, as the staff, on our final fully transferred from PERSAC to PERSAL, so we're off the SAC's establishment. We've moved from a cost center to a designated transfer department, and we are now paying our salaries and our payments ourselves. And as from the 15th of March, all our staff have been paid from the secretariat. We're even more excited because finally we also have our own virtual private network, so we are having a bit of challenges, because we only did the transfer about 2 weeks ago, but you can now send our emails to .csp.gov.za and no longer .sats.gov.za. And then with the building, we didn't fulfill our dream, but we're getting there, in that the public was finally advertised on this space, and the advert concluded yesterday. So I think that that will be another milestone. That's only at an institutional level. There's still the substantive work that we will be presenting to you now, and then we'll be ready for our interrogation. really, I have to object. We really don't do interrogations in this room. Accountable police service that reflects the values of our civilian mental state, and the mission of the Secretariat is to provide efficient and effective civilian oversight of the police and to enhance the role of the Minister of Police in view of that vision. So our strategic goals, as per the Act, is ensuring that the Minister is well advised and supported by the civilian Secretariat, and that a service delivery oriented police service that we have a service delivery oriented police service that is accountable. That there's quality, evidence-based, strategic research, policy advice, and legislative support to the Minister of Police, that we deepen public participation in the fight against crime, and that we enhance accountability and transformation of the South African Police Service. So the next slide speaks to key 2015-2016 policies and legislative priorities. So I'm not going to go through it, because we're the policy unit to this and we're the legislation unit to this, and they'll be saying almost the same thing. The next slide speaks to our strategic outcomes, which we've directly taken from the Act. And I'll just then summarize it, because most members are familiar with content. But it's to provide support for the Minister to effectively manage the provision of HR management and HR development, the provision of integrated communication services within the Secretariat, efficient and effective use of our resources in a legislatively compliant manner, a partnership strategy that mobilizes role players and stakeholders in strengthening collaboration in crime prevention, strengthen cooperation with other government departments, community mobilization in crime prevention activities, strengthen collaboration between government and the private sector and the academic sector, clearly develop policies around major policing issues, effective research program on policing, effective legislation, improved performance of SACs through our oversight role, transformation through our oversight, facilitating transformation or monitoring thereof through our oversight role, monitoring the implementation of policy and legislation by SACs, and then credible evaluation of SAC projects and plans, and then the APP seeks to these strategic outcomes. Now, unfortunately, we had made a commitment that our staffing establishment will be fully populated by the end of December, and we failed. There's been a turnaround or an exit by some of our strategic staff. So we still have a vacancy of 11, and the recruitment services for the filling of those posts are underway. The most critical post would be the chief financial officer. We had advertised that post some time back, and then we did the shortlisting. And when we went through the initial shortlisting, there were only 5 good applicants, and even those 5 weren't adequate. And so we had to re-advertise. And now we've already concluded the shortlisting process, and so we just need to do the interview. And then, of course, the other vacancy, the other dreading vacancy, is the chief director's post. The 2 posts that were filled was the director list and then the director HRM. Our total budget is 105 million. It is rounded off, and it will be unpacked by each of the units. And then just with regards to Program Administration 1, in which the Office of the Secretary falls, I'll speak to that, and then each unit here will speak to their own unit. The purpose of Program 1 is to provide administrative support, strategic leadership, and management for the department. The strategic objective is to enhance corporate governance and ensuring that the Secretariat achieves its mandate. Our sub-programs are department management, corporate services, financial administration, internal audit, and office accommodation. The total budget for all the staff units in Zone 1 is 36.451 million. Now, when it comes to the office of the secretary, it's the strategic objective is to provide leadership, strategic management, and direction to the team. And this will be our priority for the next financial year, to maintain and even improve our planning system, to facilitate effective cooperation between IPED and the secretariat. We've launched the consultative forum, and that means we were at a high level that we've given the meetings of consultative forum, but there are those monthly meetings that continue. Effective performance management happens, that performance agreements are signed, that we have given a performance appraisal. Compliance with all the relevant legislation. We facilitate that the minutes happen and the HOD meetings before that. We provide strategic and technical advice to the minister. And we engage with other government departments through the JP's cluster services.
Thank you, Secretary. Chair, with regards to corporate services, the purpose is to provide reliable and efficient corporate services to the Secretariat, including the provision of human resource management and development services, as well as employee relations, communication and information technology services, and auxiliary services. The strategic objective is to provide effective and efficient corporate support services to the Secretariat to enable achievement of its oversight mandate through communication, information technology, HR, and auxiliary services. The following areas have been prioritized: personal implementation, functional occupational health and safety committees, leave management audit reports, approved integrated HRM and HRD plans, workshops on change management policies, corporate identity, approved work skills plan, and approved employment equity plans to be implemented. With regards to financial administration, Chair, the purpose there is to provide PFMA compliant financial accounting and supply chain services to the Secretariat. The strategic objective is to ensure sound corporate governance and to provide supply chain and financial management services in the Secretariat, which are 100% compliant. The following areas have been prioritized: in-year monitoring reports on payments to creditors, interim and financial reports, interim value reconciled, asset value reconciliation, and demand management plan to be implemented and monitored. Thank you.
Good morning, Member. With regard to internal audit, the purpose is to provide is to conduct audit to check compliance and performance. So the overall strategic objective of internal audit is to perform strategic risk-based audit and consulting services directed at improving the effectiveness and efficiency of the secretary operations, risk management, and governance process. So the following areas have been prioritized: learning plans and operational plans. This one here, we prepare a three-year learning plan starting in the current year, which is 15 and 16, and the following 2 years, which is 2016 and 2017 and 2018. And after the plan has been approved, we actually conduct the audit and issue the reports advising the management in terms of improving the processes. With regard to risk management, we have risk management policies that have been approved, but in line with the national trigger guidelines, on a yearly basis we review them and update them to ensure that they're in line with the best practices. And then we, in terms of the special requirement as well, we have strategic risk assessment workshop every year to identify the strategic challenges facing the department and advise them in terms of treatment. And then we'll also do operational risk assessment, risk register, where we also outline the strategy of how the organization is going to improve their processes
then we also develop the risk management terms of reference and the tracking report, in other words, of AG SA management report. In other words, the report that AG is going to issue after completing its work for financial year 2050 on a quarterly basis will be checking whether the department is implementing the recommendations made by AG to ensure that we improve our processes going forward. Audit committee meetings, we also going to ensure that there is four meetings taking place every quarter, and the risk management committee as well. Thank you.
Okay, I'll just speak to the risks and the mitigation of risk. But before that, the other thing I forgot to mention is that we, for the first time, our books were audited by the Auditor General, and the findings are very favorable, although they will be writing a formal report when we do our annual report. The gaps that they had identified, I think, would be the most glaring ones. The fact that we don't have a CFO, and the fact that the secretary is still acting. And then the other gap that they had identified is that our structure currently is not adequate for the demand of the secretariat, and so they asked us to do something about it, but they also requested a meeting with the minister to share the outcome of the audit. So with regards to the list now on slide 13, this non-compliance with the determination of the use by officials, and we're working on that. Demand plans not submitted by managers, delays in the finalization of internal audits due to a lack of cooperation, a lack of buy-in by management in implementing risk management. In that regard, because we didn't have our own systems before, it's unfamiliar to people, so we need to get used to the fact that, you know, you have to submit your performance assessments on time, there's budget meetings every month, we have to report on the status of the budget, also there's a risk register that you have to comply with, they have to be part of this. So it's all new, and initially people thought that the oversight of the functions of the internal the audit committee and the internal audit committee and the risk committee was to police them, but now they're getting to know that it's standard within government, all government departments and their institutions, and so compliance is coming along. The mitigation of this, we have implemented a lead register. There's now a regular meeting for senior managers to ensure that they are informed of what is required from them. We're looking at procuring an automated internal audit system and a risk awareness session. We had one already, but we're conducting regular risk awareness sessions so that people can see why risk awareness is important. I'll give over to the doctor.
Good morning once again, honorable members. Program is intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership. The purpose here is to manage and encourage national dialogue on community safety and crime prevention. The strategic objective, therefore, is to contribute towards creating a safe and secure environment through partnerships with stakeholders. So we have two sub-programs, which is the intergovernmental, civil society, and public-private partnerships, and the second one is the community outreach. So the budget for the partnerships directorate stands at 22.539 million. Then in terms of sub-program one, the purpose of which is to manage and facilitate intergovernmental, civil society, and public partnership. The strategic objective is to liaise, communicate, and mobilize stakeholders through public participation programs to strengthen service delivery. So the following areas will be a priority: working agreements with civil society organizations on crime prevention programs, anti-crime campaigns, assessment of community safety forums, CSF, as well as the SAPS rural safety strategy, police stations implementing school safety protocol,
as well as established working group. In terms of the second sub-program, which is community outreach, the purpose is to promote, encourage, and facilitate community participation in safety programs. The strategic objective for this program is to enhance stakeholder and community participation in safety and crime prevention programs through Izimbizo, establishment of working groups, and community policy and forums functionality. The areas of priority in community outreach is public participation programs implemented, as well as provinces implementing community policy and forums guidelines and assessment of CPF functionality. Thank you. In terms of the risks and mitigations identified for the partnership unit, delays in executing partnership projects, but the mitigation against that is that we engage supply chain management unit after the submission of the demand management plan to ensure that such delays are avoided in future and even in the near current execution of the partnership program. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. In terms of the program for legislation and policy development, the purpose there is to develop policy and legislation for the police sector and then also to conduct research on areas of policing and crime. So then moving to the strategic objective is to have constitutionally compliant legislation, evidence-based research and evidence-based policies for policing and safety. And then within that we have the two sub-programs of policy development and research as well as legislation. In terms of the overall budget for the two is just over 23 million, but for policy development and research specifically, we have a budget of 12,155,000. Looking specifically at the policy development and research program, the purpose there then is to develop policies and undertake research in areas of policing and crime. The strategic objective is to provide evidence-based research and evidence-led policies for policing and safety. So the key priority areas for this financial year would be to look at the development of the white paper on safety and security, as well as research around the professionalization of the police, as well as demilitarization of the police. Then there's also a project on looking at firearms management within the SADC region. We also have special projects looking at the policing needs and priorities of the provinces. And then we also have a resource and information center that looks at providing an order point for information and discrimination within the department. In terms of the risks and the mitigation of those risks, two key risks for the unit at the moment is the lack of data analysis skills, and then secondly, delayed access to information. So the mitigation of those two risks is one. Training on data analysis is currently being undertaken, and then there's also the implementation of an MOU between the Secretariat and SAC to look at how we can ameliorate issues around access to information.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. With regard to legislation, at the outset, I just indicated that the policy and legislation work in harmony in terms of the policy implications that will impact on legislation. Just to begin with the budget, the legislation budget is 11, that appears on slide 20, 11,477,000, which includes the budget for the GPCR judge. And if you can go to slide 23, the sub-program legislation, the purpose is to provide legislative support service to the Secretary of Police. Now, Secretary of Police is the principal advisor to the minister, so the advice to the minister is through the Secretary of Police. The strategic objective is to produce legislation for effective policing and provide legal advice and support to the Secretary, again, ultimately to the Minister through the Secretary. The following areas will be a priority, Chairperson. The bill to be tabled in Parliament is the review of the South African Police Service Act, the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill, which seeks to repeal or replace the National Key Points Act, the Animal Movement and Produce Bill, which repeals the Stocktake Act, the National Key Points Amendment Bill, type of, because it relates to the critical infrastructure protection group. Then the other bill is the protection of constitutional democracy against terrorist and related activities, both to align it with the international definitions, and firearms control amendment bill. With regard to regulations, Chairperson, the South African Police Service Amendment Bill, which deals with the GPCI regulations, is currently being discussed with the GPCI officials with a view to finalizing the regulations following the Constitutional Court judgment in November last year. And the Firearms Control Amendment Act 2015, once it's passed by Parliament, then the South African Police Service Act, once the 2015, that will replace the current Act once it's passed by Parliament. Then the regulations that will flow from the Critical Infrastructure Act, once again, when it's passed by Parliament. With regard to risk and mitigation, Chairperson, the risk, the first one is the inadequate human capacity within a legislation unit with required knowledge and skills to meet the legislative demands and to deliver quality legislation. Currently, we're working in harmony with the South African Police Service in terms of drafting legislation because of national obligations. From a policy perspective, the Secretariat is responsible for that compliance. Then the other risk is the delays in finalizing the drafting of legislation. Again, there are dependencies. Sometimes we plan, but there are other dependencies that impact on the meeting of the targets. The mitigation of risks is the fast tracking of the filling of posts based on the review structure once it's approved. Then structured engagements with stakeholders, that means internal and external, with other departments where there's cross-cutting implications. And finally, the participation in the development committee, presentations on the draft bill. As part of the process, whenever bills are presented to Cabinet, it first has to go through the development committee of the JCPS, then to the Jesus Forum and the Cabinet committees. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and the honorable members. The last program is the Civilian Oversight Monitoring Evaluation. Its purpose is to oversee, monitor, and report on the performance of SAF, and the strategic objective is to conduct an effective oversight, monitoring, and evaluation that contributes towards accountable and transformed police service. It has, this chief directorate has three sub-programs, which include police performance, conduct, and compliance monitoring, policy and program evaluation, and information management. The budget, you see there that the biggest budget goes to police performance, conduct, and compliance, as it shows three directories, followed by policy and program evaluation and information management. Starting on the first sub-program, its purpose is to monitor the performance, conduct, and compliance and transformation of SAF. And the strategic objective is to improve police performance, compliance, and police conduct. And the following are the key priority areas for this financial year. Oversight visits of local stations, just oversight visits conducted and reports compiled. And others include the assessment reports on different areas such as SAF budget and program performance, assessment of complaints and monitoring, mitigation management, SAF implementation of IP recommendation, domestic violence, compliance to legislation by SAF, compliance to policy and policy, implementation and compliance to legislation, police station service delivery trend and analysis. The police and program evaluation, its main purpose is to evaluate the effectiveness of programs and implementation by SAF. And its strategic objective is to evaluate the effectiveness, efficiency, and impact of the program implemented by SAF. And the following are the key priorities for this SAF program. It will be reports on legislation passed, the implementation of recommendations by portfolio committee and the secretariat. That means this program intends to engage with the portfolio committee and all the recommendations that are made by the secretariat to key areas is to capacity building to provincial MND corps across different provinces. The last one is the information management sub-program, which has the purpose to provide reliable, accurate, and timely information that will inform evidence-based decision-making. And the strategic objective is to provide reliable, accurate, and timely oversight, monitoring, and evaluation information that will inform decision-making process. And the main priority for this sub-program is the information management systems developed and maintained. Following are the key risks and mitigations of the risk: the lack of access to information from staff, a lack of formal channels for communicating or oversight, monitoring, and evaluation findings and recommendations to staff. Whilst there have been a lot of interactions with staff to deal with most of these areas, we can say that also the mitigation factors will also include the conclusion of the Secretariat regulation and the MOU between staff and the Secretariat. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe from the portfolio committee perspective, I think we need much more detailed presentation of the budget. Really, if you compare it with SAPS, my business, with CEDA, it's below power. So we need a proper indication of your main classifications, economic classifications, what's the implication. Because for us just to see those broad amounts, that's not really sufficient for us to engage and interact on that issue, but I also allow the members to speak on that. Maybe the first, let's go to questions and comments. Maybe the first issue is the strategic thrust of the presentation. Now, if we analyze your strat plan that was tabled last year, although it wasn't, I think, presented to the committee, I think there's a gap, and maybe get the acting secretary to speak on that. Because I think at the end of the day, what is the aim? The secretariat should contribute to the professionalization and the demilitarization of the SAP. So there must be an impact. We also made that comparison last week with IPED. We said, well, IPED, you must deal with corrupt police, but the Hawks are actually arresting all those corrupt police. So what we want to say at the end of the day, that there must be a response by SAPS management by the work of the secretariat. Now, if we go through the strat plan as well, there is very few mention made, I think, of the NDP only four times, and also of the demilitarization of the police. Now, last week, we also heard from SAPS, they couldn't really give us a proper, comprehensive implementation plan how to deal with the issue of professionalization and demilitarization. It was one or two scattered or maybe loose standing projects, but not the overall picture. So what I think is missing from the presentation, and also maybe to again to go to the strat plan, is how do we deal with the NDP goals and the demilitarization and the professionalization of the police, also from a policy point of view. Of course, there is in your APP, there is at the back, your targets of your research projects, but for us as a community, it's critical that there must be a change in behavior of SAPS management at the top level, that it can also cascade to the provinces and eventually the station level, because our constituency of the various members, they complain about at the end of the day about service delivery at the local level, at the station level. So from a strategic point of view, we think that there should be much more emphasis on the question of professionalization of police, demilitarization in your strat plan, and also the NDP, how do we offer relations? Because the problem is, next month will be the second year into the new administration. So from a portfolio committee perspective, we need urgent change in terms of where the South African Police Service is going in terms of professionalization. We can't wait for that. So maybe Acting Secretary could give us an indication what proactively will be the input from the secretariat side to ensure that there is buy-in from the SAPS management, and what would be the outcomes, what we foresee could be the changes. That is the first comments from my side. And then maybe it's also the issue of legislation that was indicated by Mr. Soman. Are we as a committee getting clear dates? I understand the issue of the debt common, but you know, we're moving towards the due recess. In 6 weeks' time, we anticipate that we already would have be ready to deal with the firearms and other issues. So in terms of the year, you've got in your APP5 at the back, you know, your performance target for the year, but the question is that really viable in terms of all the processes and also the public consultation? So maybe you just get an update that we can also plan, because we must plan for the third term. That would be the two preliminaries from my side. Honourable Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now that you are a designated entity, and congratulations, is your top management budget. My next question is on the utilization of consultants. It is still a problem. When are you moving away from it? One of the committee's concerns in the past was the way DBA cases are handled. Have you improved your monitoring on DBA cases? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Robert. Honourable Mbele.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two or three questions, or three from my side for this first round. The first is, in terms of the filling of the establishments, the posts, we saw that, as you mentioned, the vacancy of 11 so far. I'd just like to know which program or programs are carrying the brunt of these vacancies so far. So what's the breakdown in terms of which programs are the least staffed or capacitated? My second question is, under the list of risks for program one, I didn't quite get a clear statement of a concern that the committee had in the last financial year about the underspending patterns as a risk to the institutional performance of the departments. Is that still an issue? It would seem to me from a cursory reading that it would be, and what's being done around that, and in detail, if you can, please, because we were able to get some quite concrete proposals and plans from other departments who've also reflected the same issues around monthly monitoring meetings and that sort of thing. So yeah. And then thirdly, the risk under program, this is two, I believe, program two, is the risk mentioned there, oh sorry, am I wrong, I'm looking at intersectoral coordination and strategic partnerships. Yeah, yes. So the risk there is the delay in executing partnership projects. My reading of the proposed mitigation is that most of the shortcomings would seem to lie on the side of the civilian secretariat, if the mitigation thereof is for your own supply chain management to kind of jack up their performance. Is that a correct reading? And which of the external stakeholders, because I have to believe there are also external stakeholders who would be a drag on progress in that regard, which of the other external stakeholders are also not quite carrying their weight in carrying those partnership projects forward?
Honourable Goldemora.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, congratulations again. I feel like it's your birthday. Right, the issue is acting heads. I understand when someone resigns and they move on, but I don't think this entity has ever been before us with a full complement without the whole Hollywood thing of acting people. You've been acting now, I mean, you must at least have an Oscar nomination at this stage. I don't know how long you've been acting now, but very long. So, Chair, the appointment of the head, I believe, falls to the minister. And in light of the fact that we've actually had an acting head for very long, I would ask if we write and ask where the process is and how close we are to having the confirmation of a head of this entity. And please talk to the under expenditure, some areas over. It's a bit of a concern when we see entities with under expenditure. Please address that. We also, now I'm not sure if in fact we asked you, but I remember at our strategic plan when we went to some hotel, there was a request for a paper on demilitarization. I believe that fell to you. I'd like to know where it is. You know what the National Development Plan says, and the minute you start raising it, then the SAC says, well, what do you mean by demilitarization? And we can't answer. To many people, it means getting rid of the apartheid-era ranks that they return to. It means that they should basically stop acting as though they're in the army, but we don't have it down. We don't have a paper. We're waiting for you on that. Please give us an indication of where we're going to see it. Large increase in goods and services, I think in administration. Please tell me why. Have you done the research on how to improve police performance, compliance, and conduct? I believe that was another paper you were doing. Your top management, do they have security clearance at all? If not, why? Because you deal with very sensitive issues. And finally, I have to raise it, the e-docket system. I know it's like a unicorn, frankly. You never see it, but you hear it's around. And it has been around for a decade or maybe 12 years now. Have you followed up? Are you on top of it? Are you driving it? Is there something you can do? Because certainly SACS can't. Thank you.
Thank you,
Almakarabana.
Maybe just one issue that Almakarabana also raised, the question of the understanding. If we can maybe just give responses, because that's what the other departments did. Can you just give us an indication of what happened from the third to the fourth quarter? You know, was there an improvement in that situation? Because if we don't know, you know, we can't really the department's budget, next we can say, well, you're under-resourced or not. So if we can just also get an indication in terms of the classification, what was the picture in the fourth quarter? That's critical for us. Honourable, yes.
Thank you, Chair. I've been covered on a number of questions that I would have read. There was a request for the resource allocation by the committee to the Secretariat. As to the efficacy of it and the fact that the police are complying with it. If that report has been compiled, how soon can we get it? If it has been done, would we gladly receive it? You know, Honorable Kolapa has touched on a very, very pertinent a matter that is very, very dear to my heart, the detectives. I think the endeavor has always been to improve their quality of work, hence the e-docket system. But to my dismay, upon becoming a member of this committee, I began to realize the inherent shortcomings within the system. The fact that, you know, detectives have laptops that do not talk to the system. They are unable to update information on the system from the client scene into the system is problematic. And for me, there was a very strange disconnect between the laptops they had versus the system in their offices. Can something be done to ensure that these systems begin to talk to each other, thus improving the quality of their work? And perhaps would need a report as this committee on progress in that area in due course. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
On the risk, you are talking about maybe finalizing the drafting of legislation. I've got two questions. Will you please provide a more detailed plan with time frames and or deadlines on processing of the legislation? My number two question, will you be able to finalize in time all planned legislation, including regulations? Thanks, Chairperson.
Now, I think, Honourable Members, before we continue, I think congratulations is not yet on the table. Because it's still not a separate vote. And if you look at the budget information in the Red Book, the EME, if you compare it to CIRA, it's not sufficient. So, but we'll get the response. Honourable Ramatakane.
So you stopped me from following my... I will not blush. But I think let's thank the head for presentation. It was quite brief to the point. I'm sure it allows us more to interact with certain things that have been suggested. And I don't... intend to be long, but I just want to ask this general question at the beginning. The ENE, which is Estimated National Expenditure, makes certain suggestions in relation to the department, what they're going to do. Now, I just want to find out from you, when you look at that and you look at what you have written, there's a slight deviation, not necessarily said what informs that. If you could explain that. Then while I'm on that, the 5-year strategic plan that you have this word from here, the 16-page document, I find it a very difficult document to follow in terms of strategicness of it. I find more of a listing of issues without necessarily getting into strategicness of the document. If you can maybe explain why it's so. For an example, when you talk about enhancing accountability and transformation of the police, that issue, what is it? What are you talking about? Other members have raised the issue about professionalization, demilitarization, and so on. So I find it difficult to follow it and look at it as a kind of strategic document that is saying 5 years, because it doesn't quite give you what you want to get, what is it that you're talking about. Now, away from that, because probably you're going to explain it, the third question for me that I just wanted to ask in general terms, and I can go through all the program, but for now, for this round, maybe let me just ask it. The standalone department, yes, you are taking that responsibility now, but as you set out your targets, what you're going to do in a year with the money that you are asking us to support, do you really think that the targets that you're setting are good enough, are sufficient for what you're asking as a resource for us to approve as a resource? For an example, we talk about the anti-crime campaigns, for example, as a kind of a target that you're setting. Don't you think that it's a bit too low in terms of that? Now, I can go on, and when I go to the M&E, can ask the same questions in terms of the target. When you talk about looking at a target for the year, don't you think your target a little bit low? I just want to hear you speak on the issue of the target. Then, if you look at the legislation and you talk about that section that is the policy, I don't see the when. You list the issues, but you don't quite tell us. in this lot of legislation that we're going to talk about in a summarized way, but are we expecting all that in this financial year? And if we are, at what period in this financial year are we going to get that? So it's not broken down so that we can see, and then we can then say to you, hold on, but you are not necessarily delivering on what you asked, that you say you can deliver. So community safety forums assessment, is it covering all the provinces? So don't you think that is a bit too low? Now, I don't know whether your staff establishment of the 121, which 11 vacant posts that is still there, or whether that has an influence on the functionality, the optimal functionality of the department. And maybe you will explain that, that whether this is so. So really for me, the issue about the core function, the issue about the target in terms of the core function of the department, whether we think as a department now, you are ready to deliver. I won't ask the question about the acting, because that's a responsibility that falls in the other spheres, but I think for where you have a responsibility, the importance is going to be, because the issue about filling of vacancies is not a new issue. It's come from the previous financial year as well. The last one, audit committee. I would like just to hear from you, the audit committee, just the issue about its own composition of it. It's to just write it and functionality of it, because I think it's a form of critical function. And it is going to be more critical given that you are now on your own. Thank you, Chair. Those are a few questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zakani. Honorable Vija.
Thank you, Chairperson. On monitoring and evaluation program, I see that the 2014-15 estimated performance was 500, but as we go to 15-16, it's been reduced to 18. Could we just tell the committee about the reduction, the reasons why, so that I can understand? I don't get it right there. Thank you.
Thank
you, Chairperson. Just one question. In some of the programs, there's this issue that keeps on coming again and again. In some of the programs, it says delays in accessing data from subs. In the other program, it is lack of access to data from subs. What is the cause of that, and what type of data are we talking about here? Because my understanding would be that you have, whether it's quarterly meetings, whatever, with subs. So what is the problem with accessing data from subs? I think that would be my question. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Alderman Walken. Administratively, I would yourself and your team for the responses.
Thank you, Chair. There are some responses that are just simple, and so I'll get it over and done with. And then I'm going to ask Mr. Robertson to give an overview of the finances in particular, what was the state of our expenditure as of the last quarter, and then also a detailed analysis of our projection for the next financial year. And then the issues that are related to strategy, I'll come back to that after Mr. Robinson's input. So in respect of vacancies, we We're not vetted. We've suffered. Everyone has filled out their forms. I think the Portola Committee meeting just before the end of the year and told us to begin that process. So we did that. We submitted our forms and we gave our forms to state security. So now we're waiting on state security for progress and we're just following up regularly, but that's certainly something I should prioritize now. Because getting being vetted is imperative. Linked to the question on access to data, it's one of the concerns that SAPS does have is how secure is the data going to be, the information going to be once they've given it to us. Even who are we that could have that kind of question? What are we going to do with the information? So that's the one part where there's reluctance that we're not vetted. And then secondly, there's just, I think, a general resistance to us sometimes stepping over into the terrain. Let's say service delivery complaints as an example. People will complain to the secretariat and then at a national level now. And then some of it we give to the province, but some of it we even look into ourselves and we engage that. And then the response would be that's our issue. And we could say, no, it's fine, it can be your issue. Can you just give us feedback as to how far the process went? And then they're reluctant because that is their terrain from their perspective. So that is also why the MOU is important, so that people can see that the roles are complementary and that enhancing the effectiveness of the group is going to be benefiting all of us. And so we can only do that if we have access to information. Even the quality of analysis, the quality of policies that we are writing, the quality of policy recommendations. Now, it's not as deeply evidence-based as it should be. You know, it's a general analysis. So you can't make policy that way. You're supposed to have the raw details and then you analyze it and then you can see where the gaps are and then you make policy recommendations. But we're working towards improving our relationship with SAPS and already around some areas there's been a lot of cooperation. And we're even getting support from the presidency in that regard to ensure that there's better cooperation. Then of course we participate in all the platforms, TACNAT Choice and the cluster where information gets shared. But the details that we want, they're reluctant. I'm trying to think of another one. Let's say the customer satisfaction survey. So the civilian secretariat is supposed to see to what extent has SAPS implemented as a recommendation. Now, then we get to the report. But now we're saying, okay, we're fine and well, but we want to know if the complainant is satisfied with the service that was rendered by SAPS, because now we've seen the figures. But it was the desired impact achieved. Then they would be reluctant to give us that information. So we're not sure if that reluctance is just an administrative, you know, that they overburdened already, or if there's other reasons why they wouldn't give us the information. So when we say lack of information, that's one of the things that we're referring to. With regards to the consultants, I wouldn't say we overly heavily reliant on consultants. We basically just use consultants. Now we're using a consultant for the white paper on safety and security, and I'll say how it came about. When we took the white paper on police to Cabinet in December, Cabinet told us they want us to bring the white paper on safety and security concurrently with the white paper of police back to them in February. So it just wasn't practical, you know, because people were already working right through the December holidays, and so we needed to contact consultants to do it. So that is the one part, it's extra capacity. Then another area would be an issue of confidentiality, in that sometimes the minister feels that the issues are too sensitive, because we're not vetted, the issues are too sensitive, various people have various interests, and so we would prefer external people that he knows are objective around the issue to do an objective analysis. He obviously does involve some of the people in the secretariat, like I'm involved in the process because I'm new, but I think once the vetting process is completed, you'll have a lot more confidence in the staff. But us using external service providers is by no means an indication that that the skills don't exist within the department. It's whether people have, whether there's the person power. I'll use one person as an example, Mark, and I'm sorry to do this. But he's the director of policy. And so he must be responsible for the integration of the comments on the white paper. He's responsible for the integration of comments on the white paper on safety and security. He's responsible for the integration of comments on the national infrastructure protection policy. And the comments are substantive. You know, it's not just things that you can just read and see how you put in. It needs an analysis and interrogation. So he's one human being. He doesn't have an assistant researcher. And then in addition, while we are doing the review of the Tax Act, we are the review, I'm touching on the strategic issues now, but the review is a whole lot deeper than just saying the gender and equity transformation within SACS. We are saying when we demilitarize police service, to what extent does the police represent the role that was envisaged in the Constitution as an example? How far does the police deviate from the public service? And is that deviation really necessary? Now, one person does all of that, and with each of the staff, it's like that. When we were looking at the IT, our move, getting our own CETA system and getting our own virtual network, it's one person. So the consequence is that we pay a lot of overtime, that people are tired, luckily they are not moving. So the restructure, hence the Auditor General was saying that we need to have this restructuring of the structure. Because even though there are people and people are working really hard and the outputs are being achieved, the quality of outputs could possibly be even better if there were more staff. And that's why I'll allow Mr. Robinson to do the finance presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to add on the consultant part, the budget that the department had for the previous financial year was about 2 million rand, which was about 6% of our total goods and services budget. We only spent 3% of that amount on consultants, and most of it, like the Secretary indicated, was for help on research on policies and legislation. For the new financial year, for instance, we've only budgeted about 3% of the total goods and services budget for consultants, especially still for support on the policy research and those issues. On the expenditure, at the end of the third quarter, the department has spent about 54 million rand of the total of 99 million rand. The preliminary figures for end of March is 79 million rand, which is on average about 8 million rand every month for the last 3 months of the year, which brings our total expenditure for the year to about 79%, which is an improvement of about 8% on the previous financial year, when we only spent about 72% of our budget. If we look at a bit more detail around the budget for 2015-16, the goods and services budget
on answering the question about administration's increase in goods and services. That's one of the things that goes with the fact that we're now a designated department. So our expenditure around our own computer systems and access to the transversal systems like PASS and PARSAL will now have to be carried out by ourselves and not by SERPs, because they've been footing the bill for the access to PORF and PARSAL. Now we have to pay for those things ourselves. The few accounts I've received so far is around about 100,000 to 200,000 rand a month just to access those systems. For such a small department, it becomes actually a bit ridiculous. We pay, we'll probably pay around 5 million rand or so for the year, and that's not including the amount that we indicated in the previous portfolio committee meeting of 17 million rand that we still need to pay CETA for implementing our systems. We're hoping that Treasury will allow us to roll over the budget that we didn't spend of about 20 million rand so that we can cover this, because we don't have it in our new financial year budget. We've only made provision for the normal expenditure around the computerized systems and so on. I'm not sure what other information the portfolio committee would like to hear around the goods and services budget. Most of the items that we spend on are related to the whole background of us visiting police stations, consulting with various role players. So not in line with the Treasury asking that most departments look at reducing the cost around travel and meetings and those things, that's part of our job. We need to visit. So we've tried to get the increase on that budget around travel and subsistence and venues and facilities as low as possible. The increase is actually just around 800,000 rand in total on travel and subsistence for the year. Between the 2 years, 2014 to 2016. We've also, like I've indicated, the largest increase is actually on the computerized systems and the communication, because we now also have to implement or install our own telephone system, because we can't use the one that we've used from SEPS. And the increase on the compensation of employees is just a normal increase that we have to make provision for in terms of the annual increase on salaries for government officials. I don't know if I left out something. I don't know, understanding, maybe I can just touch on that a bit. As I've indicated, we will be underspending with about 20 million rand. That's about 20% of our budget. What we've already started doing, we've implemented meetings on a monthly basis now, starting from the end of April, when we will meet with each director and each chief director, give them their specific budget for the year with their expenditure for the first month going forward, as well as the indication that they've given on how they will spend the money. And then this committee or a central committee will then meet on a quarterly basis and redistribute money to the areas where we can see that spending do take place, especially around all these new initiatives that the minister has announced around Zenobia. We will have to probably redirect some of the funding towards the partnership unit, because they play a very important role in this program. This committee will then, with the inputs from each director and chief director, then be in a position to ensure that we do spend
process in terms of your budget control process. You know, proactive steps, you know, even on a fortnight basis, what are you going to do to ensure that that budget is spent? Because if you're not going to get the support of Treasury to roll over, you're going to have a problem. But the trend is there is underspending, and there shouldn't be underspending because you've got a critical oversight thereof. So I think, Acting Secretary, we will need from the committee side a much more detailed implementation plan that you deal with this underspending for once and for all in the coming financial year. Because otherwise, it's very difficult to argue in the budget debate, let's give more money to the Secretariat. I mean, you have 0.14% of the police budget, but if you don't spend it, it's going to be 0.013. So it's critical that you've got the necessary resources, but I think that's... So there needs to be much more, I think, detailed implementation plan for the committee to be certain that they will, you know, monthly meeting, people are away, people are sick. There need to be reports, and I think we will need from this this committee will need also quarterly reports, or 3-month reports, or every second month to know that thing is on track. Otherwise, we're going to be here next year and we're going to see the same trend. That's not acceptable. Let's get follow-ups on these questions, and then we will give the Secretary to deal with the strategic and other questions. Honourable Ramatakani.
No, Honourable Chair, two questions. The one is the one that deals with the 20 or 21 million odds. You say if the Treasury is going to give it with, if. I'm not sure whether you're quite clear in your head whether you are going to get the money, or whether you have asked, because you can't get the money unless you have provided the Treasury with a good reason for rollover, because there are certain criteria that whether the money is committed or not committed. Now, I'm not sure whether you have applied for rollover from Treasury or that amount, if you understand it, because you speak as if there's still a hope of getting it. Have you asked for a rollover for Treasury? Because that should have happened already. And number two, the question is in relation to the secretary. In a reply to the question about the staff and the quality of work, she seems to be saying, yes, we'll do it, but we don't have enough hands. That's why the quality sometimes can be better if we have more hands, and an example of it. Now, you have a legislation. It's an act. You are expected to comply with the act, in the fulfillment of the act. Now, to do so, you have to make a determination what is it that you need to be, how you need to position yourself to implement the act. Because it's not good enough just to say you're not having enough hands, but the question I'm asking, what hands do you need? Have you done the analysis in terms of the act? What would you require in terms of your full implementation of the act? Because if you don't implement the act, you're going to have another challenge. Of the failure to implement the act, and we're going to came for this committee for that particular oversight. So the question I'm asking, who determined this staff establishment for you? Was it signed off now by the DEXA? Is it signed off on the basis of a predetermined staff establishment, or what you have determined based on the work and the core function that you have to perform, bearing in mind that you have the act to implement? So I'm not hearing that coming out. I'm hearing you complaining. I'm hearing you not saying what we have presented. This is what we have presented based on the core function and the act, and this staff establishment was cut because of this reason and that reason. So I just want to make this clear, because we don't want to carry the cap or the failure to implement by yourself because we've somehow alluded to the committee that there was an issue about the one person doing everything and the poor quality. We don't want to have that much. We want to ask a different question. What is that the staff establishes that they've determined that will be able to be optimal in a functionality? Take into account, they may well say, you can't implement the entire staff establishment in 1 year. We will roll it over a period of 2 or 3 years for you to reach that. But that's a negotiation that happens at the time when the staff establishment has been signed off. So has it been signed off? I'm just asking those two questions. And one is an financial question.
Thanks, Chair. I agree totally with Honourable Amashakane that there's a detail that is lacking in terms of the needs of the unit in carrying out its mandate. I don't know if that could be derived or influenced by the fact that you have been underspending. So you are saying to yourself, you will come up with new numbers and you might be asked questions as to why when you're underspending. But look, there is a need for additional personnel. I think it has come out in your presentation that you are undercapacitated. For you to carry out your mandate, you naturally need help. And would not want to hold back on that, because then we judge you on your ability to deliver on your mandate. The second part, Chair, is a question that relates to your strategic objectives. I think I do not get a sense of a plan, you know, that a tangible plan. There is a plan. For instance, on your intergovernment, on a sub-program on intergovernment, civil society and public private partnerships, you talk to liaison communication with the business stakeholders. Do you have documents with concrete plans, for instance, on liaison, on communication, mobilization of stakeholders? What is the plan? To mobilize, we all know what it means. To communicate, we all know what it means. How, but specific to the unit in relation to its mandate, is there a plan, a clear outline? What are the steps? What are we talking about? Because against that backdrop, it's then that we're able to judge you. But if you say we mobilize, how many people have you mobilized? I mobilized 20. How? In what manner? Who were they? You get it. These are issues that I would want you to reflect more on with a view to, you know, crystallize your plan that we can begin to relate to. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable follow-up. Thank you, Chair. Yes, it's a follow-up on the point that came from the Director of Finance about there was a figure mentioned of, I think there's going to be a cost item that will come to 5 million in the year. Which broke down to about 100 to 200,000 per month. I can't recall the exact details. I think it has to do with the setup of the IT systems. Am I correct? Did I get that? Yes. Okay. But the underlying point I've got from that, and tell me if I understood this correctly, was that the way I put it out in my notes was that the and I think it speaks to other items as well in terms of the feedback from the AG that I heard the acting secretary mention, is that the fixed operational cost component is currently proportionally too high for how a department would normally have its budget laid out. My question is, and clearly that speaks to a need for more money, as Member Tyler said. Now, but is that primarily a function of the current set-up stage where systems and those structural things need to be put in place? Or if one was to project forward, after those are set up, those capital costs, if you will, have been spent, are we still looking at a similar challenge around the fixed operational costs actually being proposed? therefore the need for the secretaries to have more money is not just about the short term in terms of trade-offs between setting up structurally and you know, capital-wise, and then we'll be fine after that, or is it going to, are we going to have that challenge sort of remaining the same going forward?
Thanks for that. Maybe just on the vetting, I think that is a critical issue, and maybe we should invite the DG of State Security to come here for the next 3 weeks, because especially the acting head of the unit, the acting secretary, and the, you know, the four top positions, I would also understand if SAPS is reluctant to, you know, share information if it's of sensitive nature or it's classified in terms of the miss. Because I don't know whether some of the people that still must be vetted have been there for a very long time. Is that so? Yeah. So they haven't been vetted for years. Is that possible? Yeah. I mean, that's totally unacceptable. So what we need is really that matter to be clear, because it will affect your ability to do your work effectively in terms of the act, in terms of monitoring, apart from the security-related you know, issues. So from the committee side, we need really urgent attention to them. Maybe also ask the acting secretary to take that up with that relevant institution. But from, I think from our side, we'll have to invite the DG for state security, because we can't have an institution operating in this cluster with the acting head as well as the four chief directors that we've got vetting. I'm not talking even of supply chain and then others. It's not acceptable at all. Okay, but let's get the other responses.
Yeah, just to give Mr. Roberts a moment to repeat, if Mr. Mizao can respond to the composition of the audit committee.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Despite the fact that we managed to have an audit committee 9 months or 8 months into the financial year, we actually eventually met from the in December. In terms of personality, we met three times. That was in December, February, and March. And the committee itself is composed of very experienced members, with one being a professor, with a chairperson of the committee. And they have since reviewed the work of internal audit and risk management ever since we started to meet. And I think they will be in a position to determine whether the civilian secretary for police is working adequately in terms of improving their processes around the internal control system. So I think so far they are doing a wonderful job, and our next meeting is scheduled next month on the 27th of May. They will be approving the internal audit plan for the audit that will be done during this financial year. And they will be, and they will also be looking at budgets of the department as well, and also provide their input in terms of whether the budget is adequate to enable the secretary to achieve its mandate. So I think so far everything is going quite well. And we, just to support that as well, they also emphasize the need for us to appoint the Director of Fraud and Risk Management, Director of Anti-Fraud and Corruption, which has since been appointed, and they are on a regular basis review on the strategic risk assessment that has been identified, whether the organization is doing much or is doing well in implementing those risks. So that's all from me.
Thank
you. In respect of the quarterly targets are in the APP, so we didn't bring our operational plan to the portfolio committee. But we can certainly give it as a mixture, the operational plan for each of the units, just to ensure, to give the portfolio committee certainty that the things that are in the APP and the targets, we have the operational plan and then the business plan and then we'll give it to performance teams. So if we be doing that, we will be linking business plan to the performance agreements, and then we have designed the reporting mechanism to ensure that at least at a performance level, we are able to submit regular monthly performance reports to National Treasury. And then likewise, I think, Chair, that you're correct, that we need to have a more detailed plan around how we're going to prevent underspending. Currently, it's only what Mr. Robinson had as presented. We were saying we're going to be having this monthly budget meetings, but that's not adequate. So definitely we'll apply our minds and see how we're getting on.
Thank you again. On the rollover issue, the main reason why it sounds as if I'm not really saying is we have to submit by Thursday to National Treasury, and then they go through the process of approving or disapproving. But what we have done is about a month ago we've already sent a letter through to National Treasury to tell them about the situation and about the time that CETA took to implement our VPN, and that we would need this money as we didn't make provision for it in the new financial year. That then brings me to the question around the spending on the computerized systems. The initial amount that we indicated in the previous meeting with the committee of 17 million for the implementation is the ones off amount, but the 5 to 6 million on an annual basis is just to keep on running normally. So if there's any enhancements that we need as we go forward, that will be added on that 6 million that we budgeted for the year. So that's for sustaining the systems as they are implemented. But the initial cost was the one of around 70 million that we still need to pay.
Would it require a copy of that detailed sector of the finances?
No, you can just get the economic classification.
Yes, by the end of today.
Yeah, by tomorrow, because remember we're going to consider the report, so we'll be good to take it out.
Okay. And then with regards to, so the understanding and this starting stance is not quite linked. Because our target for spending would have been 99% if all the IT equipment had to be achieved. But unfortunately, there were delays on CETA, although CETA did significant throughout, given the historical reputation. The fact that we even got that far, we think it's a significant progress. With regards to the new structure. A structure was signed off, but it was signed off during the previous secretary's time. And then as the mandate grew, and that's the structure that is currently before the committee. That's the one with the vacancies. The vacancies are primarily in the admin one, so it's not in your core function. So the core functions are delivering, but also we're working smart in the sense that the provinces are saying we're not utilizing this added strategically, and they're willing to support us. So some of the things that can be done at the provincial level, we decentralize those engagements, and then we see how at the national level we can play a more strategic role instead of getting involved in the operations, and we maybe look at policies and frameworks that will provide us as guiding tools. And then Mr. Mellon also asked, are there other stakeholders that are not putting their weight? And we're so fortunate that the stakeholders are really willing to support direction that is given. It is the direction that needs to be asserted. So currently the challenges are within our supply chain management, and it's because they're very efficient. So, and the one, they double check every source document. And so, but what we're saying is we don't want to boost efficiency, but we also need to have operational effectiveness. So we're working on that. Then with regards to the necessary establishment, indeed we have started a needs analysis. It was initially conducted by the Department of Labor, and they recrafted a new structure for us that we got towards the end of December. Our unions were a bit verbose because we didn't consult the unions. There was a reason for that. We wanted it to be needs-based, you know, based on this is the act, this is the responsibility of the task of the Secretariat, and then what establishment is then required to effect it. So we didn't want it to be influenced by any subjective interest. So now that we've concluded that process, we are running it through the line units just to make sure that the subjective element is also taken into consideration, but obviously it's the objective determination that will inform the final structure. And then once when it's decided of what, then only we'll start the engagement with the CPSA. We had hoped to start that engagement sooner, but we'll do it now in June.
Right. On that point, can we take a 10-minute break? When we come back, to the other responses and the 6-second round. Okay, 10 minutes. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you. Yeah, Thank you. But I don't see any. I can't see a machine.
Right, so honourable members, let's start. We're going to give now an opportunity to the acting secretary to continue with the responses and as well as follow ups, and there will also be a second round. In terms of our program, after this session, you're going to deal.
Hello?
Can we just have maybe silence? We're going to deal with the xenophobic matter first, and then after that with the white paper. So that's the order. Yeah, no, there's going to be second round as well. So we're going to give the opportunity to the acting secretary. I also just want to welcome today a delegation of UCT master students. They are attending today, you know, looking at portfolio committees functioning and so on. So welcome to them. We hope they enjoy the session today. And good luck with these studies. Acting Secretary, over to you.
Response to some of the issues around the MME and also professionalization of the police.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Member. There were three questions that were posed to MME. One was the issue of the target of 500 that has been reduced, and that relates to the performance directorate. You will recall initially that 500 target included the provincial visits and the national visits, and that there were discussions with the portfolio committee that we need to disaggregate that information so that the national ones specifically are put aside and the provincial ones will continue. So as you can see in the ATP, that that 18 only reflect on those that will be dealt with at the national secretariat. However, the provinces will continue with the provincial business. The question that was asked by Honourable Member Sakane was the issue of targeting. I must say that given the resources that at our disposal, we have come up with those targets. At the same time, we have stretched ourselves to a certain extent. However, it is I acknowledge the fact that if you look at broad standards around how MNE resources normally are allocated, looking at the magnitude of services and organization, there is a need for improvement. Yes, I acknowledge that. The other question was asked whether are we doing any kind of monitoring and evaluation of research projects. I must say that yes, all the monitoring and evaluation that is conducted by the department is informed to a large extent by the MDP, and it will also we balance that with the CFP Act. As we know that the CFP Act is talking about issues of DVA, issues of budget utilization, monitoring of IP recommendation, and assessing the complaints. Just all those issues are covered in the Act. Same applies with the NDP, in particular when it comes to the issue of professionalization of police. All those reports, whether it's eminent report, complaints report, because they concentrate on the issue of professionalization. How are the police, for example, how do they deal with the issue of complaints that are coming from the public? The response rate, the litigation, going deeper as to what are the causes of this litigation or civil claims. Those, in our view, are professional. They speak to the issue of professionalization and that what can be done, which in our view will influence.
indicated, we believe that we need to interact with them as partners and ensure that there is an understanding and that's compliant in terms of those reports, in terms of the implementation goals of the CRACs, in monitoring and evaluation, how do we deal with the issue of findings, which is a matter that is kind of negotiated between parties. So basically, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, in terms of the dates for the legislation, I think for the firearms member, we've received the date of June as we'll be ready. And then the National Critical Infrastructure Bill, Cabinet has asked for further amendments, so we're taking it back to Cabinet before the end of May. And then we have to gazette for 30 days, and only then thereafter we can give it to Parliament. So we do have a schedule that was given to the leader of government business, and we can ensure that your office gets a copy of the schedule to enable the portfolio committee to plan. Then with regards to the more strategic issues, I had left it for last because to some degree it falls out of our mandate. We have to play a careful balance between what is the responsibility of SACS, what is the responsibility of the Secretariat, and even when we are supporting the Minister, some of the functions are more of a political nature than a bureaucratic nature, and so not that we are abscribing our responsibilities, but it's a balance has to be maintained. So from our side, what was done is, in the white paper on police, and also on the white paper on safety security, we do give some strategic engagement around the four pillars of the NDP. So how would we envisage the professionalization of the police, not at an implementation level, just from a policy level, because implementation is the role of SAC. And then also demilitarized police force, how do we envisage it? How do we envisage community centered? How do we envisage a community justice system? So the two white papers do speak to that. At another level, though, the MINMIC is comprised of minister and the MECs and all the heads of the entities. So it's SACS, ourselves, IPED, PRCEDA, and then the provincial HODs, and then we also want to engage SALGA. So Minister has called for a special MINMIC that will happen either before or after budget vote is the 14th of May, to discuss exactly that. If we're talking behavioral change of the police, if we're talking substantive transformation, now the review of the RAG, the location of police stations, accessibility of police, and then also the nature of the conduct. So he's called for a special MINMIC where those issues will then be discussed. So while the White House on Police gives a broad framework, and while we will be having research into those particular papers, the one on a demilitarized police service and the one on a professional police service, and while we will be stimulating discourse and debate around it, at a more strategic level also, the Minister is convening this MINMIC to give direction to assess as to how at the operational level they can start conforming to the policy trajectory.
Right, follow-ups and second round, maybe secondly just the other pieces of the discussion, I presume that will also be in the fourth quarter or even next year. Yeah.
I'll just read the dates here. The firearms control amendment bill, the target was the 30th of April, but it's now coming in June. In the National Critical Infrastructure Bill, the target to introduce it to Parliament was the end of May. It was now we're going back to Cabinet at the end of May. the South African Police Service bill, the target was the 31st of August. I think we'll meet that target because we've done quite a bit of work on it. The protection of constitutional democracy against terrorist and related matters bill, our target is the 30th of June, and we'll probably meet that target because it's almost done. I mean, it's done. Now it must just go through the government consultation process. Movement of animals and animal produce bill, the target is the 31st of October. So we'll give a copy to the secretariat.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think that's very helpful. Let's do the follow-ups and also the second round. I'm going to start on this side if it's fine with members. And then,
Honourable Mo.
Yeah, second round and follow-ups, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. You are supposed to submit your quarterly reports to the committee on a quarterly basis. This has not happened. Why? My second question, there is a decrease of funds allocated to compensation of employees. Will you be filling in all vacancies this financial year? My third one, tell us about the establishment of the National Policing Board as required by the National, by the NDP. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Abatsi, Honourable Belek.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just still have one outstanding question from the last round, which was that breakdown of the vacancies programmatically, the 11 missing vacancies, just to find out where the biggest impacts of the gap is. And then still looking programmatically, there's quite a load in terms of the legislation and policies that you'll be processing in program 3. And we see that list on slide, sorry, let me just find it again. 23, that's correct, yes, thank you. Slide 23, the acting secretary has indicated that some of those will likely be met because a fair amount of work has been done on them. But it's still quite a workload, and I'm not sure if all of that falls on Mr. Roberts. The correct name, sorry. Rogers, sorry, Mr. Rogers. If that all falls on you, and if so, that's one person with a long list. But the concern that then comes up is that there's been a decreased allocation to Program 3, through which all of this is being processed, and coupled with the vacancies and the aforementioned risk of shortcomings in data analysis and that sort of thing, it gives a worry that might not be met. Can you just explain the decreased allocation in Program 3 from the last financial year, and how that will impact on delivery and reaching the targets in relation to the list of policies and legislation for this year? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Have you done, I'm again asking about a research report, done research on the deployment of the tactical response teams to police crowds? Now, what is your opinion on the use of that? Do you see them as a force multiplier of the POP, public order police, or just as a force? I mean, what are they doing there, is the question. Also about the station visits. You know, it strikes me that with the number of visits you do, added to the number of visits that IFED does, and secretly they're simply looking at cells, but they do a visit, and the number of visits that we do, that between the three entities, we should get to virtually all the stations, not in a year perhaps, but at least two. Is there a coordination that's going on? Or are we all just going off in our own silos and sometimes doing work that's already been done? And then finally, what have you done in terms of the various disputes in relation to the crime statistics release? Now, there was, as I recall, an instruction for the staff to work with the experts on this, such as those at the ISS, in terms of the collation of the crime stats, although, of course,
you know, having the SATs draw up their own stats is like having a matriculate mark his own paper. I'm never, no one's ever going to believe it. But have you looked at the annual release? Have you considered the alternatives to the whole Hollywood bun fight? Because by the time they get out, we all know some of them are so out of date they're irrelevant. Some as far back as 18 months before. They are of no use to civilians who are trying to protect their homes or their businesses or their vehicles or their trucks, banks. They don't know, you know, they now know what was happening a year ago. They're useless to anyone. Have you considered that the release is counterproductive and that real-time crime statistics should be available at all stations at all times for anyone to go in and find if their neighborhood's being hit and who by and who to look out for? Because we're really not arming civilians sufficiently in terms of information to protect themselves. We don't have enough police to do it. But have you considered alternatives? If so, please tell us what they are.
Thank you. I'm Bukhara Bona.
Thanks, Jen. I'm always fascinated by the humanitarianization concept of the police. In my other life, I spent some time in a country where police used to carry paint and they wore short pants and they would come and make an appointment with you to arrest you. And would always laugh at them. Upon aspirin being arrested, would then be transported through public transport from Bavane to Mansay, and in between would run away. Now, what is the conception of the civilian secretariat when it comes to the demilitarization of the police? You mean removing the weapons? Because when we talk military, we talk weapons. Does it talk to the removal of firearms, the machine guns that they have, as well as the pistols that they have, and arming them with patents, removing military titles? There's no conception. Can anyone assist us to understand what is it that is meant by demilitarization?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is one. Earlier, you talking about Twitter. When you inquire your own visual private network off from the Twitter?
Thank you very much. Honorable Damascus.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. The follow-up on that, that question of the staff establishment. I know that the number was not given, and I think I don't know whether it was still a confidential number until it's finalized. It's remain a confidential, I'm not sure, but one of the things that will help you with the information in this committee is that this actually at the end is committee that's going to either speak for you in terms of the budget issue, understanding your mandate and understanding that the staff establishment is insufficient. So you have a choice to keep it a confidential or to tell us in terms of whether your analysis in terms of the looking at the Act and what you have, because you said you've inherited the staff establishment from the previous. But what is the reality check you're looking at today? So you didn't mention that. I thought it was important for us to know what is it, so that we can then start seeing the problem that you're depicting. Second one, Chair, it is also a follow-up question. I did ask the question in relation to the NME question, and didn't quite answer it, unless I didn't quite hear. For an example, the program two, that the ENE suggested a different amount and the APP suggested a different amount. So I was asking what are the discrepancies in the rands and cents, if you could explain that. Thirdly, it's probably it's not a follow-up, it's a new question. In terms of the previous engagement, there was an issue about the committee had an interest to understand the CTF and the footprint of the CTF in terms of functionality and capacity. Maybe you could share light in terms of that even today. One associated to that is the safety forums, the footprint on the safety forums, and the functionality and capacity. Also, that is, I think, an issue that has been carried over. If you could maybe just explain that. The legislative program that you suggested, including what needs to happen, both in terms of the outreach program, in terms of the consultation process, as well as the legislation that you are doing, including the advert, advertising it, suggests to me that it may require increase in budget. But that particular item has actually seen the decrease in terms of the budget. If you could just explain that. The next message is that we're going to have more requirement in terms of resource around that particular aspect. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The 2016-16 APT says that function transfers from IPT of dealing with service delivery complaints by the secretariat is now under discussion. And now, can we be provided with details on this discussion so that we have a clear understanding of precisely how it is implemented?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this will be a follow-up on the question asked by Honorable Ramataka. The organogram, your organogram, because I've got the feeling that you are a bit understaffed. As a new department, are you still going to restructure yourself and come up with an organogram that would be that would make you efficient, or what is the plan as of now? Because you keep on saying that there's one person on this position and another person to do this and that. What is the plan as of now? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Lenore. The question from my side, the one is you also asked SEPs about that. I think the position of CFO is still vacant. Maybe just indicate when was that vacancy, when did the vacancy occur, and can we maybe just get indication, have you advertised, is the shortlisting interviews? Can we just get that? And then the other issue, maybe for the acting head to come in, if one looks at the APP as well as your presentation today, the danger is, from a strategic point of view, is that one can become so entangled in setting up the department, getting the separate vote, consult with BBSA, a lot of internal activity, and interviews, but the output in terms of changing the scope and the face of policing in South Africa will become priority number 13. So we need assurances from the acting secretary to ensure that, because if we look at the target, the risk is, he's so busy, establishing this department, internal focus, and SAPS is going to run its own show. I mean, SAPS is now indicating to us they're going to get their own research institute. I think, with more staff than I think, probably got the staff. The question is the impact of the secretariat ensuring that we've got that police service that is trusted by the community. In terms of what you presented today, your APP, are you focusing on core business or on non-core business? I want that answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think also the question that you made in the opening remarks around are we really having an impact, and then this, it was also affirmed by the other members, and I think your analysis is correct when you're saying that we are too internally focused, and that we are leading factors to almost act unsupervised, other than when there are clear challenges that need to be addressed. So, and it also links to the earlier question of whether our APP is indeed strategic enough, whether our targets are the most effective targets. The way we had written up the APP, it is, even though we did the normal thing, that you do your SWOT analysis and external environmental analysis, I think the analysis was to a large degree operational, and so we've selected targets that will make an operational impact in the long term, so we say, and it will contribute ultimately to sustainability, but whether from a global, or I say from a macro level, not global, like a macro national perspective, we are really keeping a watchdog eye over that, and whether our APP adequately speaks to that. I have to acknowledge that there is a gap. I think that the outputs that are reflected are the correct outputs, but it's the interpretation of the outputs and the execution of the activities related thereto that we will have to up our game. So it's noted. It's noted. And hopefully when we come to bring our annual report, which will then also be our fourth quarter of the report, hopefully there will be some improvement in that regard. So we've given our quarterly report, and it was discussed in the committee, that the quarter four report is outstanding, and we're working on it. I can't even make an excuse. but we'll definitely start with it. Thank you for that reminder. With regards to the decreases in allocation, I'm going to ask Mr. Roberts to respond to that. With regards to the discussion on the National Police Board and the contextualization of the demonetization, I was wishing to humbly request that we defer that discussion until the presentation on the white paper on the police, and then we can engage a bit further, because indeed, the way the National Police Board is captured in the white paper on police is not the same as the way it was intended in the National Development Plan. So let us present it, and then we can get some engagement on that.
Thanks, Professor. What I want to know is, when talking about this quarterly report, how are you going to submit them now? Will it be a quarterly report here, quarterly report there? How are you going to submit them? Thanks.
And maybe related to that, consequence management. I mean, somebody must be responsible for that in the department. We from the portfolio committee side, we need adherence to that. So if you can maybe just talk about that as well. Thanks.
Let us just consult, let us consult, and then let us tighten up our internal systems and put that consequence management process in place. But the way we're normally doing it is that we submit the quarterly report the week before we get an invitation from the portfolio committee.
Yes. When will we get the answer to that? Yes.
Mm-hmm. was this a long we have the quarterly report. Let us submit it at the end of next week. The only reason why we didn't submit it is it's just an administrative miscommunication, because normally, and this is no excuse, my apologies for that, but normally what we would wait is we wait until we get the invitation from the portfolio committee, and then we submit the narrative and the presentation. We'll
do
it next week.
No, I must just maybe indicate we need it like SAPS and the other departments who get it on a quarterly basis, notwithstanding where they come to the portfolio committee on those. It's critical. Because I think when we had the first interaction after the election last year, there was the problem of all those other outstanding reports of 3 years. It was a legacy issue. I mean, it wasn't the current management's baby. But I think also the DBA report is also outstanding. So I think we just need some tightness around submission to the committee. Prioritize. Thank you. Let's get the other responses.
So then if it was capital, we'll just have a discussion on the National Police Board and demilitarization as well, I think, discussion. Mr. Robertson to respond to the request on the decrease in budget, and then Mr. Rogers to respond to the issue of the deployment of the tactical. Yeah. And then I want Mr. Kompo to respond to the question on station visits and the coordination thereof. Or maybe we wish to say there's no coordination, but there's a process towards that. Our own virtual private network, we've got it now. It's operational, it's functional. We now .csp.gov.za. We no longer .sats.gov.za. And we're responsible for our own internet, we're responsible for our own emails. The new organogram and whether it's secret, it's not a secret, but it's not yet ready for presentation to the portfolio committee, purely because we haven't yet shown, Minister hasn't yet signed off on it. We haven't yet begun the engagements with the DPSA. So if we could please be allowed an opportunity to when we come next quarter to do a report, and then we can disclose the organogram. I like the idea that Mr. Amtukhan is saying, and I hadn't thought of it, that if we share the organogram and why the organogram is necessary, the portfolio committee would be in a position to better motivate for why the establishment of the secretariat needs to increase. So thank you, we appreciate that. With regards to the community police forums and the community safety forums and the footprint, I'll allow Mishak to respond to that. Service delivery complaints, there's a system, a process that we're working on with the presidency and with SAT, and I'll ask Leander to elaborate on that one. The CFO, Mr. Mashvini, you can just say it became vacant in January, and but we can say it was advertised in December when the first shortlisting took place, when the second shortlisting took place, and when we anticipate the interviews to happen. Yes, the internally focused one that we acknowledge. It was also, we're not saying that we're not going to maintain the balance, but personally, I felt that the secretariat needed to have its house in order before we point fingers at SAPS. Like, if we didn't have audit committee, if we didn't have a risk committee, if we didn't have operational policies, then it's hard for us to tell SAPS to do these things. If we're not utilizing our budget strategically and optimally, it becomes difficult. But I acknowledge to you that while we're getting our house in order, we also have a statutory obligation, and that obligation mustn't be neglected.
Right, the other responses?
I just need to understand clearly, you say there's a difference between the IPP figure and the E&E figure on program 2 specific. Well, not according to the documentation that I have, it shows a
figure as 36457, and I had the EMU at 36.5.
Yeah, no, 36457 is administration.
Yes.
And then to the nearest million rand on the ENE, yes. On the ENE they take it to the nearest million.
So who's right? You're right or the
teacher? No, it's the one has the more detail and the one has the less detail. The published one doesn't have all the detail that in the APP. The one that gets published by National Treasury. They take it to a rounding up figure while we give it to the nearest 1,000 rand.
So your figure is rounding it up?
No, the ENG figure is rounding it up.
Okay.
While ours takes it to the nearest 1,000 rand.
So you're not losing any money? There's no money?
No, we're not losing any money.
I think there's two responses.
Maybe I can just add on the establishment and the posts. The initial indication would mean that we will definitely need additional funding. Probably at least half of what we currently have extra. So our budget would then have to increase by around about 50 odd million just for the current financial year. That's without taking any growth going forward. Depending on how much our establishment will have to increase in line with our mandate.
So that would push your current expenditure to what?
Around 105 million to around 160 million. What?
Well, this is a guesstimate. We're guesstimate.
Other responses?
Okay, on the MNE question that was posed, it has highlighted between CSPE and the provinces, there is a coordination around the visits. Although I am not aware as to the in terms of the detailed information between the portfolio committee and our performance colleagues around the visits that are being run. But I guess if there are maybe some gaps, it's an area that we can look at. But I'm not aware of anything in terms of that. Going to service delivery complaints, the IPIC Act, in particular Section 35(6)(b) of the IPIC Act, states it very clear that in terms of the transitional arrangement, that the service delivery complaints will be moved from IPIC from ICD to SAPS, and it goes further by saying where appropriate to the Secretariat. Unfortunately, those are transitional arrangements highlighted in the Act. There are no timelines. But however, discussions have started in terms of all these parties in dealing with this issue. We started with a robust complaints dialogue, commemorating on the solutions. There is a committee that is working on this issue between IT, SAPS, and Secretariat on a continuous basis. But over and above that, there are processes in place. We have interacted with the presidency to presidency and GTEC, which is the unit of the Treasury, where we felt that we needed some help on the business process mapping of the complaints. Because we feel that all the stakeholders, well, there's so many people, there's a lot of fragmentation and duplication around complaints. You've got presidential hotline, also public protector, and so many units. started dealing with, so that we can sort out this matter and come up with an integrated policy on service delivery companies. At the same time, during this financial year, we are also planning to conduct a customer satisfaction study, which we think that it will inform with those people that have complained to us, and to check issues of their satisfaction, the perception, and that we believe that the public can also, we can learn a lot from the public as to the solution. So this is an area that that is a priority within the civil sector.
Thanks, Chair. The chairperson in his opening remarks alluded to the lack of visibility by the department in terms of its mandate. But I see in your budget there has been a reduction in your advertising campaign. Your budget for assets has basically halved from 412,000 to 252,000. How do you then hope to enhance the visibility? I would presume that advertising plays a major part in enabling you to put yourself out there. How do you then explain the discrepancy? We then begin to see money is moving across programs to compensate for that.
I'll just give a quick feedback on the research regarding the agreement of the TRG. We're in the process of finalizing the concept of the CSR, the scope for the research, looking at some of the issues that have been raised by everyone in the Colabana. And we'll look at what the impact of that is on policing operations as a whole.
Other responses?
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. The issue of CSS and CTS, first of all, start with CTS. CSS indicated there was an update report submitted to Parliament last November on the research of the functionality of CTS countrywide. But I'll just quickly take you through some key elements. That we've got 125 CSS established nationally out of the 278 municipalities, so we still have more that need to be established. We are assisted mainly by the provincial departments, and municipalities are also involved with us. However, there is some notable, poor council participation in CSS engagements at what level. However, in Mpumalanga, Limpopo, it's quite notable and quite significant to realize that the MMCs play the lead role as chairpersons of the respective CSS in those provinces. There are some pockets of excellence as well, chairperson. In Dover, municipality, in Ahanang, in Moses Kotane in the northwest, and also in Mbashe in the Eastern Cape. We've been informed that those CSFs are quite doing very well. Fortunately, we have an engagement with, or we'll be part of the engagement of the CSF structure in Dover on the 7th of May, so that we also learn as to how do they actually succeed with this task. Other questions relate to the poor participation of our cluster departments in CSF engagement, despite the fact that the policy makes it very clear that they have to be at least minimum stakeholder participation, and they are quite listed in the policy document. There is also, having engaged SALGA, a concern that the municipalities still don't understand their role in terms of public safety. They only see or limit their role in terms of traffic management and other activities, but in terms of the broader social crime prevention issues, there's still a bit of lack of cooperation or willingness to actually do that, despite the fact that there's legislation that really compels municipalities to provide public safety across communities. For instance, in municipal systems, like the Municipal Structure Act, those are policies that provide guidance to municipalities in terms of public safety. However, we had the task of making sure that the CPS are also involved in terms of how they should actually operate or perform or participate in the CSS. When this policy was implemented, there were concerns that the CSFs are going to take over the work of CPS. But through our provincial departments, the CPF board and other structures, we make sure that we try to disseminate the messages down to make sure that they understand their role insofar as this policy implementation is actually concerned. But also in some cases, there's an attempt to make sure that the established street communities where they are also get supported through our CPFs so that they don't actually lose momentum wherever they actually exist as well. The challenges, honourable person, is that those that I've mentioned, that there is a bit of reluctance by some municipalities to really dedicate personnel in terms of making sure that CSS are actually functional and supported. In some cases, we find that traffic officers are relegated to the work of CSS, which is not supposed to be the case. And also, there has been a bit of challenge in terms of making sure that the CSF, because it's supposed to develop the community plan, each plan must at least form part of the IDP, which will then be supported by the respective municipality. Some municipalities through SALGA are actually making inroads with regard to that. And also encouragement of the CSF structures to give feedback to their respective constituencies in terms of the programs that they actually carry out. At that level. But of course, the different governance structures, I think, need to be checked up in order to make sure that they take part in implementing the policy. For instance, in some provinces, we get concerns that the provincial DevCom is not up and running. And as a result, that will have an impact on the implementation of the policy concerns. On our side, we are, as part of the mitigating approach, we are committed to engage the SALGA on this process, but also request our provincial departments to advocate for councillor support at all levels to make sure that the policy gets implemented. And also to find means and ways of integrating the provincial social crime prevention priorities in the CSF for community safety plans and its implementation going forward. That's on CSF chapter. On CPF chapter, there is a, I think the issue has been discussed on numerous instances, and the absence of a codified policy makes it a bit difficult in some cases to really see our CPS operating maximally. There are some CPS that operate, and they've got various projects that they implement, but again, with the introduction of new policies, things go offset, but I think these are our duties, civilian secretariat and provincial departments of safety, to make sure that we begin or we continue to educate the structures, explain their mandate. I often say, Chairperson, that we as a department have an opportunity to go to a scrap plan, sit there 2-3 days, because our mandate is clearly defined in the Act. But with our structures as CPFs, they've got a mandate in the Act, in legislation, but they are never given that opportunity to engage at start level or operational level where they're supposed to be. Something that which I think the Secretariat really need to take part and make sure that we support the structures on the ground. But notably, countrywide, the CPFs are functional. There have been instances of CPFs in KZN not being up and running or functional, a matter that the Secretary has said to give it a priority and determine as to what are the reasons of those CPFs not operating as required by the law. That's the best.
Thank you. Follow-up,
Honourable
Mahmani, on that response?
No, just a short one. I think that it's quite good to hear. But there's a statement that says some of the provinces are not necessarily putting their weight. I'm paraphrasing. Now, we don't quite know. It's a very vague statement. So you don't have the information about which provinces are driving this and which are not driving it. For example, we make an example now of CPF in KZN, that there was a glaring thing that you had to take an action.
you could, if you don't have it now, you could allow maybe through the chair that you just provide that kind of information.
Thank you, Honorable. Other responses?
Thank you very much, Jane. I'm going to try to answer most of the questions which were focusing on HR to the different respective members of the committee. Regarding the concentration of the vacancies within the programs, most of your vacancies are around administration because 64% of the posts which are vacant are currently under administration, which is about 7. Your intersectoral coordination and strategic partnership takes about 9%, which is about 1 post, as well as legislation and policy development. Civilian oversight, monitoring and evaluation is about 18%, which is about 2 posts. And regarding the question that Honorable Mamulibati asked about whether are we going to fill all these vacancies within the next 3 months. Yes, that is what we have been striving to do to ensure that we are 100% in terms of our establishment. As one could and I'm happy that Member Mulibati and other honorable members were part of the previous committee where they mandated us to go and revise our post-establishment, which was increased from 114 to 121 to 80. Efforts still have been made to fill all these vacancies. As one would recall that last year around September month when we presented, we were about 16 vacant in terms of our posts, and towards the end of November we were standing at 7, but then immediately at the end of December it jumped back to 11. I need to indicate that one of the reasons that we cited was the fact that competitively speaking, especially in terms of our salaries, we did realize that one of the challenges were that our posts, especially your assistant directors and deputy directors, were not on the same wage levels with other departments. And as a result, we then came out with the job evaluation grading that was implemented. Since last year, we have upgraded most of our posts, your ASDs, your deputy directors, and so on. That was within the core business. And that is why when one looks at the concentration of the vacancies, one would see that in terms of your core business, the picture has stabilized. But now, this 64% is now in administration, where again, we took a decision also to upgrade the administration, which was done from the end of February this year. So we're looking at a situation where we're stable in terms of vacancies around both administration and core business. What we have put in place in order to ensure our commitment around the filling of these vacancies is to have the so-called weekly briefings where we sit together with the executive of corporate services together with the head of HR, the director of HR, where on a weekly basis they are reporting to us in terms of the feeling, the challenges that they are experiencing and so on. And also the monthly reporting, which would culminate into the quarterly reporting that the committee has requested the secretary to provide. Coming to the issue of the CFO, yes, the post of the CFO was advertised, as already indicated by the secretary, that it was advertised with a closing date of the 21st of December, I'm not sure about the date, but it was towards the end of the month. However, we did not really receive sufficient applications. We only received 11, out of which we found that we could shortlist 5 people, but they could not meet all the requirements of the advertisement. And therefore, a decision was then taken that let's re-advertise. So we did re-advertise. We already had our shortlisting on the 16th of April, and our plan is to have the interviews by the 15th of May, where we will then be finalizing the appointment of the CFO. I think also with regard to the issue of our establishment increasing based on our needs, we subscribe to the view that says, you know, the structure always follows the strategy, and hence the proposed structure that is currently in the office of the minister, actually informed by the structure, I mean by the strategy that's coming from the new Civilian Secretariat Act. And like other secretaries indicated, that will be made available to the one that's doing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm.
Any other questions?
Just on the issue of the statistics, we haven't really engaged the SAP study on enhancing the quality of students and on the more regular release of information. We know that they are working with SAP South Africa on it. And then we have, in the white paper on police, we've alluded to the importance of regular access to information. Even if we're saying, particularly in terms of civilian oversight, at a grassroots level, having that kind of information available is assisting in facilitating partnerships and community participation in crime prevention campaigns. So I think if the white paper on police goes through, then we can start stimulating a political engagement on the release of statistics, because that was a political decision.
Can I just maybe one issue, the Domestic Violence Act? We had civil society that gave evidence before this committee, before we started with these interactions. And there was a presentation by ADCOF, and I think also Lisa Betten of Lutz also recently referred to the issue that since DVA has been shifted, there's fewer, you know, movement on the issue. There's a bit of a crisis in terms of who's taking responsibility of dealing with it effectively. And you know, we as a portfolio committee, we monitor that. And I think if we can just get maybe feedback, but also, of course, we'll need that at the DVA briefing. But, you know, the impression we got from the civil society organizations was that, you know, that transition and the current handling of it is not effective. And we need the assurances as the police oversight committee that DVA is prioritized. I don't know, is there any other questions from the members? Further questions before we go to the presentation on xenophobia and we close this matter? I've got Honorable Pitcher, Honorable Ramatakane, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make a follow-up on the question of this CEO, CFO. If I heard you well, you said that the shortlisting was done on the 16th of April, and we're going to do the interviews during the 15th of May. Why this 4 weeks in between? Are you not in a hurry to get a CFO? Because it's quite long that we've been without. Why the delay? Is there a policy that stipulates that you must get 3 weeks or 4 weeks? Just explain to me so that I understand the delay, because I don't think it is necessary unless there is a policy that takes time.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. There's just a quick one. I did ask the question on targets, on the ACP targets, as well as whether the law or whether there were some omissions or others. And if I recollect, the director or the secretariat mentioned something in their opening remarks about the ATT and the fact that there has to be some adjustment. Now, I just want to find out, maybe this question can also be, and then you mentioned the operational plan. Some of these things were captured in the operational plan. I just want to add on that list that if you look at the program one, from the previous, there have been some of the target that has been omitted. For an example, the whole thing about the code of conduct, and I don't see anything about the disclosure. The whole thing about the managers and disclosure compliance in your targeted indicators. Program two, the issue about the whole thing about sector issues, those kind of targets that also been omitted. A couple of them, about four of them that were omitted. So in your operational plan, when you understanding that there is a time pressure on the committee to finalize this report, on the program four, there's also some omissions on the previous targets that if we can just give an account to that. For an example, the whole thing about the Child Justice Act, the monitoring of that, the whole thing that the target is simply disappeared. I want to add that particular act becomes another critical act for the, there has been a lot of problem with the implementation and non-implementation by sex. So if the targets and just completely disappear, that means you're not going to do anything about it. And you can't ask your questions about it. So I just want to say, Chair, that in the interest of time, I'm sure in the revised document that they will be submitted, they should be able to pick up on those critical omissions that may have happened.
One question from the data that has come. Is that all the questions we have? Are you also something else?
No, I am both. Thanks.
Right, Acting Secretary, that is the logic.
And then also your statement on the message to the DVA monitoring, so that when what was the two other issues?
Just an explanation on the allocation decrease in program three in light of the quite high workload.
We are very urgent about employing the CFO, and we normally give people a lead time of 1 week to give the candidate an opportunity to prepare. Because it's the CFO, the caliber of people that has to be on the panel has to be preferably at the DDG level. So that was also one of the challenges that we had experienced. Our initial panel, the very first panel that we had for the only 5 people that qualified, that panel member was through. Then after we did the second shortlisting, that panel member was through. So now we are, not because of the workload, not because they don't like us. So it really makes me shake. So the reason why we've now set the date for the 15th of May is we're hoping to secure a very senior manager in National Treasury, so that we know that we have the best panel for the interview process. Now, unfortunately, every time a panel is withdrawn, we have to redo the shortlisting process. So that is why it takes so long, but we've already engaged that person. It's just about tying it down, going through the shortlisting process again, so that by the 15th of May, we have the interviews.
Okay.
Okay, if I can quickly just answer the two questions around the advertising. First of all, yes, there is a reduction. The main reason is that there was this big effort in the previous financial year where we did go on road shows and interviews the department to all the provinces or throughout all the provinces. We spent about 1.7 million on that marketing campaign. So in the new financial year and the next 3 years going forward, it's more of making sure that people stay aware of us. And some of the expenditure also will move over to contractors, because we use specialized services for some of the marketing, and it won't come directly out of advertising. On the reduction on legislation and policy development, what we've done during the NTF process last year, as well as the ENT process now just in December, was we had a look at not only the previous year's expenditure, but also the actual needs, especially around compensation of employees of all the units. And legislation specifically was one of the areas where the budget was actually on compensation was actually too high. So the reduction is about 5 million, and the reduction is specifically on compensation of employees. And that money was redistributed between the other line functionaries, not necessarily on compensation, but on goods and services to enable them to actually deliver the services that they need to do. And of course, the extra pressure on administration due to becoming a separate department, having to pay our computer services and all those things. So we had to do a bit of a redistribution. And one of the areas was compensation of employees in legislation.
So if I just short follow up, the compensation of people going forward, you're not going to experience a problem on that if you say there's a 5 million reduction on it. Given that you still have 11 unfilled vacancies.
The vacancies is mostly in other programs, so they have sufficient funds available on their compensation of employees. And if the establishment stay as it is, which we hope it won't, then they will have sufficient funds for paying all the current personnel.
Right, thank you. That is all the questions. Right, thank you very much for the presentation and the input from the members. I think we take note of the presentation and our input. I mean, I think it's common course that there's a few important issues that should be addressed. Of course, the appointment of the secretary is important. Also, of top management, the filling of the CFO post critical going forward. Then, of course, the question of vetting. That is so important. And we're going to ask the Minister of State Security to come here. And critical. Then I think also a more detailed and strategic strat plan as we go forward, you know, to ensure that there is really alignment with the idea of getting the South African police to be more professional, and also the question of demilitarization. Then also, in terms of the targets, I think we agree with the Acting Secretary. You must first clean your own house, get things in order, we agree with that, but I think that's the difficult issue, so to simultaneously also do the necessary monitoring of SAPS. That's going to be critical. We also believe that the issue of the organogram is critical, because, I mean, if the scoping of the Act, the Secretariat Act, were properly done by DPSA, there shouldn't have been any problem with your staff establishment. But it seems there's some material problems, and I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed. Otherwise, you will not be able to fulfill your function, and SAPS will play its role, and you won't have that impact that is envisaged in the Act, as well as by the NDP. So that is critical for us going forward. Then, of course, under expenditure, critical. You must address it in this year. I don't think there's any leeway for excuses. It must be done, and you must implement the necessary measures to ensure that it's done. Also, the filling of vacancies, critical. And of course, then the questions with relation that members raised in terms of financial management, of course, are important. It's critical that the secretariat should lead by example. Yeah, that in broad, I think, is the issues. And of course, the other information that we requested, if we can have it as soon as possible, especially the more information on the main appropriation. So thank you for that. Right, let's go to item 2 on the agenda. Colleagues will remember that 2 weeks ago, the Honourable Minister of Police announced in Durban that the South African Police Service will also play a part in dealing with this issue of xenophobia. Maybe just to indicate that there was yesterday a joint meeting between the portfolio committees of Home Affairs, Police, Small Business and Justice. Now, the assembly, some of our members attended. There was a briefing also by the national joints at that meeting, indicating the role of SAPS and Home Affairs in dealing with the issue. But I think it's also critical from the police committee's perspective that we get an indication. I think yesterday we got the assurances that the South African Police Service, from an operational point of view as well as tactically, they are addressing the current challenges, although we raised as a portfolio committee last week with the police the issue of proactive crime intelligence, the role of the stations and the clusters that needs further attention. We also indicated that there should be integrated approach in dealing with that, and also early warning system within the SAPS to ensure that such issues are tackled effectively. But I think today is to get an update from the Acting Secretary on the long-term response to xenophobia, because it's a multifaceted matter, and I think yesterday also in that briefing, it's not a simple solution. The question of migration is really a worldwide phenomenon. I mean, we had last week the Prime Ministers of the European Union at the crisis meeting in Brussels to deal with the issue of migration from across the Mediterranean to Europe. So it is, you know, the integration of communities. So it's a complex issue, but we believe as the portfolio committee it must be addressed not on a peaceful basis, you know, if there's eruptions now and then, but there must be integrated long-term medium strategy to deal with it effectively. So, members, that is really the rationale for today's briefing, and thank you, Acting Secretary, for the briefing, and then we'll give members also an opinion to ask questions and give their input. Acting Secretary, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I've already indicated, some articles from all views have come out strongly against the attack on foreigners and foreign nationals, and now that the situation is stabilizing, we need a sustainable intervention that will address the underlying mindsets that motivated these attacks. We need to address the root causes if we want long-term peace and stability. The Minister on the 19th of April launched the We Are One Humanity campaign. Why the campaign? Primarily to address the negative picture that was painted by the xenophobic attacks of the relationship between the South African citizens and foreigners and foreign nationals, but also to effectively expose those groups or individuals who hide their criminal acts behind xenophobic violence, to confront the issue of self-hatred, because no human being that lives in South can do that kind of act to another human being, and then to address the current situation and to imprint a lasting impression and legacy on social cohesion in the country and how we relate to foreigners and foreign nationals. So there are a multiplicity of issues that impact on xenophobia, but this campaign is specifically focused on the psychological elements, and it's looking at behavioral change. And our vision is to create a peaceful society where all communities and nations celebrate and cherish each other's heritage and diversity. So our objectives of the campaign is to condemn, confront and combat xenophobia, to promote acceptance of diversity, the embracing of diversity and peaceful coexistence,
to create a generation of citizens, particularly a younger generation, that is free of prejudice and to enable them to challenge xenophobic tendencies in society and in so doing ensure stability. To use the successful heritage of protest art as the power of creativity to capture people's imaginations and encourage the celebration of diversity rather than the fear thereof, to develop sympathy and compassion within our communities. So how are we envisaging to do it? The We Are One Humanity campaign will take various forms. It's a short-term program, hoping to have a long-term impact. So we'll have a number of activities that will roll out until October 2015. The first will be provincial stakeholder engagement, which is something similar to what we're already doing. It's just going to have a different slant. Then we're going to have a dedicated mass education program, and we're going to have a celebration activity, which will be called the One We Are One Humanity Celebration. Now, with regards to the provincial stakeholder engagement, why are we having it? We're using it as an opportunity to condemn the attacks on foreigners and foreign nationals. Even though it has been condemned, we just want to assert that voice. Then we want to create a platform for constructive discussion and seek practical bottom-up participatory solutions to addressing intolerance and social instability within society. So we want to create a platform where our people can come and tell us why they think these things are happening and how they think it should be resolved. But then also to give government, stakeholders and civil society a platform to clarify our policy positions and to engage with issues of foreign relations. So it's kind of going to be like an Imbizo, but it's mini Imbizo, so that we can have more in-depth and constructive debate. There was an Imbizo that took place last week, signed that was led by the Deputy Minister, but we're also having one next week, Saturday, on the 2nd of May in Gauteng, in Ekurhuleni. Then we're having one on the 9th of May in Mpumalanga. Now, we say why Mpumalanga? Because there hasn't been an outbreak there, but it is a border post. And so it's very necessary for us to engage with the issue, even at border posts. That's on the 16th of May, we're also going to go to Free State, and then on the 23rd of May, we're going to go to KwaZulu-Natal, given that there's already been a lot of activity there. The mass education campaign is a unique one, and that is the one where we are hoping to have a more sustainable psychological impact. It will be a short-term program for now, and we'll assist the rollout. And if it's successful, if it has a necessary impact, then we will consider introducing it into the next financial year as well. So the mass education campaign is intended to interrogate and deal with the root causes and future prevention of xenophobia. It's to stimulate behavioral change and to encourage a positive identity. So yes, you know those issues of self-hate, giving people an opportunity to explore and to explore the Who Am I program that is even launched internationally, where we have foreigners speaking and they explain why they are in South Africa and how they contribute to building the country. So the methodology that we will be employing is we're going to have 12 trainer workshops that is targeted at social workers and community workers, and then we're going to replicate these workshops during the school holidays with learners. Now, the last leg of intervention is the We Are One in Humanity Celebration. So we're always been saying we're going to have national dialogue on violence. Now we're elevating it. We're saying let's not just have a national dialogue. Let's elevate it to a continental level. Let's have an Africa dialogue on violence in society. And it will have two purposes. The one would be to review the impact of the campaign. This is our one now, the Secretariat's one, led through the minister. But then also to have that discourse on the nature of violence and xenophobia in society today. And that one will come from our budget because we had planned it. Now, the two things, all the previous ones are in our budget in various forms. The two things that's not in the budget, which we will fundraise for, is a music festival and a carnival, a music carnival. So we're hoping to have, as we'll collab, we haven't yet approached, but we're intending to collaborate with other government departments. And then private sectors who have, and NGOs who have demonstrated an interest. So it will be a musical festival where we will have artists from all over the continent coming and showing their musical prowess so that South Africans can have an appreciation for music from outside of the country. And then we're also going to have a carnival where people will have a display of their culture. So the intent is to showcase the richness of African culture and to celebrate it and celebrate it with with an endorsement and acknowledgement and recognition that we are one humanity. Now we're saying the campaign must go both ways. It must target South Africans, but it must also target foreign nationals and foreigners. So attached to this is it's not very costly. It's just we've designed a, unfortunately I didn't bring a sticker with, but we've designed a sticker in the form of a thumbprint, but also the shape of Africa, where we're saying thumbs up and we're promoting the concept of thumbs up. That is to show a from the South African side. Show a commitment to a xenophobic-free lifestyle, and it's also an opportunity for foreigners and foreign nationals to demonstrate their commitment to legal settlement. So when we say legal settlement, we refer to both ensuring that they get registered or that they are registered, and then also ensuring that their conduct is in the manner that complies with South African law. The fight against xenophobia and all other forms of prejudice requires the participation of all, and therefore we are most grateful and humble for the platform that has been presented to us by the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary, for the presentation. And maybe just two comments from my side and also our other members. Just maybe in terms of the footprint and the collaboration with other institutions. For example, the South African Police Service indicated in the APP they've got this 5,000 safety schools project. One of the issues that was also raised yesterday was the need to get the Department of Education on board, because if we're talking long term, it's also to deal with the value issue. You know, everybody in South Africa subscribes to the constitutional value, so maybe a suggestion from the committee would be also to look at how can you maybe cooperate in terms of SAPS making this part of the safety schools project in the curriculum, focus on the issue of how do we deal with all people in South Africa. I think that's maybe an important issue. And then the role of the community policing forums, because that's an issue that currently foreigners can't serve on community policing forums management. But in all communities, all our constituencies, there are, you know, foreign communities. And the question is, how do we involve the CPFs in this rollout? Because I presume the Secretariat will also collaborate with their provincial counterparts in the Secretariat. So I think the CPF is also an excellent vehicle maybe to multiply the message, because at the end of the day, we must influence, you know, people at the grassroots level. And the CPFs are there. So, you know, I think it would be, you know, to get your comments on that, I think we can maybe utilize that as well. Honorable Malabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 7, about your engagement with issues of foreign relations, I thought you would start with KZN, because that's where most of the attack happened. Now, to my surprise, KZN is right at the end, even after Mpumalanga, where there was almost nothing happening. My next one is on yesterday at that meeting. We were told of a
unit that was established that is headed by Major General Inambi. It's a good one. The presentation was good. But what is surprising is when we wanted to know about the last spend, he said the unit will cease to operate sometime to meet May, which to me was funny, because does it mean they'll only establish a unit when the xenophobia happening, or would by the time they establish it, people are already dead? Why don't they have it as a pending unit? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the campaign looks great. A key element for me is that this would only be one aspect of a much larger approach that needs to be taken. And another key aspect is obviously the need to address the conditions under which there is fertile ground for, number one, authentic outbreaks of xenophobic violence to happen, and then piggybacking onto that is a criminal element who then capitalize on that unrest to then further perpetrate their own agendas, and that speaks to socioeconomic conditions, poverty, unemployment, unequal access to economic opportunity, and that sort of thing. And that's certainly a key aspect I would want to have forefronted in any discussion about xenophobic violence. But just one detail from within this campaign is, I'm just curious to know who is going to conduct the training, whether it's the training of social workers and community workers, as well as overseeing and supervising the workshops that have been targeted at learners. Because thinking back to my former or my time in the NGO world, where you try to do these behavior change attitude influence strategies, whether in relation to gender-based violence or hate crimes, anti-LGBT hate crimes, it's very difficult, because those social attitudes have a very real and structural grounding in material conditions in many communities. So I'd just like to know who are the partners in terms of expertise and experience that are going to come on board to drive that process, because it can be valuable and it can have impacts. And there are organizations like the Consortium for Refugees and Migrants, COMSA, and other refugee and migrant groups in the country who have been working on these issues. Another one, groups of refugees without voice, and that sort of thing. Who's coming on board so we can ensure optimal effectiveness in these interventions?
Thanks, Chair. I think my deputies hit the nail on the head in many instances, but I want you to know that in listening to many of the radio programs, the phone-ins, looking at letters into newspapers, much of the blame for this current issue is falling on SAP shoulders because of the whole revolving door issue. Take the SAND off, South African Defence Force off the borders, put the SAPs on, SAPs couldn't do it, take SAPs off, put the SANDF back again, and somehow the SANDF didn't pick up the blame, but SAPs did for the massive influx of unregistered foreigners who came here for various reasons. Now, in 2007, I asked the Auditor General to do an audit, basically, on our borders, and he released a substantial document on the 17th of January 2008. And I'm wondering, have you done anything more like that, I'm very inclined to go back to the Auditor General and ask for a new document to bring us up to speed with the latest figures. But at that stage, and I think I know that Becky Pele at one stage also referred to it that, before he was fired, that the trains passing through South Africa's land ports and borderlines were not subjected to border control inspections. All the people would get off, show their passports and get back on, and trouble was coming in. And I mean, many people are blaming every ill in the country on Zimbabweans or Mozambicans or whoever their particular target group is. Everything from the drug situation to name it. Any social ill is being blamed. It's an easy cop-out. At that stage, SAPS had a 71% undercapacity with regard to land borderline operations, a 96% undercapacity rate with sea borderline operations, and SAPS did not have equipment to detect low-flying aircraft. So they had nothing, nothing at all. Now, all of this has now led to the issue where the South African civilians are sitting in a hospital for 10 hours waiting for medicine. They'll blame the foreigners for being in the queue. Their children can't, they wait too late to register the children for a school. They can't get them in, they blame the foreigners for being at the school. So it's like this tyndicate that's built up and built up. So I'm hoping you've done research on the matter, and understandably so, what you're doing now is an attempt to do a reboot of our national psyche in relation to many of these issues, but the underlying issues are still here to a greater or large extent. So I'm wondering if there's any way you're going to be dealing with those issues, which I think are at the root of so much of the awfulness that we've seen over the last week, especially in KwaZulu-Natal. I mean, we referred last week to the utterances of the Zulu King, and the immediate crime intelligence just rushed out. They knew there was going to be a disaster, and of course there was. That's why KwaZulu-Natal was the basis of it. I'm very interested to see what work you are going to do or still have to do in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Uncle Twala.
Thanks, Jim. These are one of those issues, but it's extremely difficult to deal with. You know, one thing that, look, I appreciate the effort as encapsulated in this document, but where I'm seated, this represents a stopgap measure. It doesn't talk to the actual challenge emanating from the movement of people, particularly in the continent, from one country to the other. It doesn't talk to the reasons why people move. We purportedly have the OAU, which is the guardian of all else Africans, with a variety and series of protocols that are supposed to govern certain situations. There are pledges that have been signed within the OAU in relation to governance by member countries. And they're actually saying to their people. Some of these challenges are challenges emanating directly from some people who have decided to be friends for life. Cronyism, basically become rulers in their countries instead of living, resulting in a situation where citizens become uncomfortable from an economic point of view. Naturally, there will then be the political element coming into it, and thus resulting them moving from their countries. I think it's an issue that perhaps at a government level, and using the AU, it's an issue that we need to engage with very, very seriously at that forum. Look, so there's a perception that South Africa is rich. But we all live here. We know the challenges we have as a people. The massive unemployment that we have, sitting at close to 25%. the challenge of we have almost 18 million on social grants. These are byproducts of an economy that has not grown enough to can take care of its own. And it's against this backdrop that it begins to be imperative that at government level we begin to sensitize our colleagues at an OAU level that these are challenges that we have. But you see, to want to reduce xenophobia as a South African phenomenon, I think it's a bit naive. Across Africa, this violence does okay. At some point, Nigerians were clearing out the Ghanaians. The Ivorians were clearing out the Ghanaians. So it's from time to time, as economic pressures begin to mount in given countries, the only outlet appears to be to basically attribute the challenges to people of other countries. It's not unique to South Africa, and I don't know. Look, we need to, as a people, be conscientious of the fact that we've got a duty to fellow Africans and fellow men, right? But we operate within the Hero of Nation States. We've got limited resources. We're cutting costs here in Parliament to ensure that there's sufficient money to allocate to services. So, what I'm trying to highlight is, let us not be blind to our own internal challenges. It's imperative that this notion that South Africa is the land of milk and honey begins to be addressed. It is not the land of milk and honey. And the sooner we do that, the better. We've got, fortunately, a chairperson of the AU who comes from this country. And I think it would be imperative that at that level, that kind of engagement is facilitated. Why, as the chairman has alluded to, why are Africans risking their lives to cross the Mediterranean in dingy boats? It talks to a continent that is beginning to fail its people. Now, the notion of South Africa being a country of milk and honey begins to place South Africa at the same pedestal as Europe. I'll be better off in South Africa as I would be in Spain or Germany. Here's the problem that Africa ought to begin to confront. And it can best be confronted at an AU level. Presence for life must go. Conditions under which people can live and live better ought to be facilitated in all African countries. And it ought to be a conscious decision that Africa begins to embark upon. That's the only way that you can have people happy within their borders. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mamula. Honorable Robert Zakon.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think that the presentation that has been done, I think, is good. As it's indicated, is to deal with the current challenge. Yes, the current challenge, and I think that the focus is important because when you had this phenomenon in 2008 in the Western Cape, we sparked off, and the activator has always been the economic challenge. There's a resources issue, there's quite about scarcity of resources, and so on. But I think the most important thing that we need to focus on the is a stabilization. Stabilizing the current challenge becomes critical. So the program is in fact geared and targeting the whole thing about stabilizing, because we can't simply afford the flare-ups. So the issue about stabilization, the issue about mobilizing community on the site to understand it, the issue of neutralizing the criminal element, because that's also critical, becomes an important one. Of course, with the police side playing their particular role in terms of dealing with the criminals in the, and first basically narrowing up and isolating them becomes critical. I think the also the one issue that becomes probably important as you go on with the campaign is the whole thing about the integration plan. The issue of integration plan, integration from the displacement issues that you deal with the what is the issue about loosely referred to as where people are kept, whether it's temporary accommodation from that to the whole integration. I think that focusing on that and driving that program in an integrated way, inclusive way, becomes critical in terms of your plan. And I think the last area of is what I think the Minister of Small and Medium Enterprise is for, the issue about addressing the most important leg of the economy, the resource, the issue about coexistence and the participation and education, particularly around those who understand the business more. Because I think the other problem you find is the phenomenon of 2008 was part of the problem was those people who were in the business were more skillful in making business compared to our own South Africans, and it's part of the problem. Instead of saying let's educate one another how best to do it, it then flips out on the other side, on the negative side. So I think this joint grouping engagement and education and mobilization going forward is going to be important, because the whole sustainability of it and neutralizing it is when the ground soil on the positive side, not on the negative side. So I think it goes without saying that ourselves as a public reps, the program that engages must err mostly on the side of stabilization, building the coexistence, the partnership issues, and come back, I mean, goes the other part of coming back on the issue of the economy side. I think that the government must drive that particular aspect. Now we talk to the South African government in terms of for the situation it has confronted us here. So I think that what the EU and the other government is doing, I think probably in the summit taking place today in terms of dealing with the particular aspects. So that will lead to to governance for the issue of governing and resource allocation. But I think here, the most important is going to be South Africans standing together in stabilizing the situation in order to prevent it to reoccur of this particular phenomenon. So that's all I want to say, and I think that we have the support, you have our support, as I said, in terms of this program, because it is important. It is important, we can't afford it to go any longer, that negativity. We have to neutralize it. And I think that's a commitment we're giving you, and it's our commitment as a country and member of parliament to come and drive that particular program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In fact, this thing frustrates me so much as a human being. But then I ask myself, foreigners and foreign nationals, can you unpack that so that I can understand? Because practically, there are people who are foreigners here, who are foreign nationals here, who are so comfortable. More comfortable than South African. Then I ask myself a question: are these attacks or the hatred taking place because foreigners, those foreigners and foreign nationals, those who are poor, they have not, are the ones who are exposed to this hatred, and those are the ones who crosses the Bay Bridge, the Rembe River, crossing the crocodiles, etc., and so on, and they come here very frustrated. And there are those, the other category is of those who uses flights and ships, and they are comfortable. So I just want you to unpack this thing so that I understand exactly the criteria that is being used. Is it used because you have or you have not. You know, I don't know how to put it. It's a problem to me. Let me just stop here.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's a very funny type of situation, because if you can try and attack one of the football stars from Zimbabwe or from Mozambique in Chiefs of Pirates, the very same people will beat you up. So what are we talking about here? How does it come? It definitely needs to be unpacked. Or how do we approach this? Why is there no xenophobia from Wari Wari, who's playing for Jomo Son or Jomo Cosmos, or for Malajila, who is playing for Sundowns? Can go anywhere in the townships, nobody will attack him. So it was just a comment. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I think most of the input of the members was comments, and I know we have to, are we going to break now, half an hour for lunch? Lunch is ready, and then we can come back if there's any, you know, very cryptic to give your responses to the input, and then after that we will deal with a white paper for an hour or so. Right, members, there's some bad plans for the afternoon. Let's go for lunch, half an hour.
Yeah.